You're listening to The Voice of the Valley, KROX in Crookston, Minnesota, 1260 AM and 105.7 FM and 92.1 FM in Grand Forks and East Grand Forks. It is 20 till 11 AM here on this final day of January, Wednesday, January 31st, as it is time for our Valley Talk program. I'm Tyler Hergert. Joining me today is Morgan Torkelson. And Morgan, how you doing on this Wednesday?
Great, Tyler. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on and coming on in person. And so what is your role?
Long story short, we help landowners in West Polk, SWCD, keep the water clean and keep the dirt where it's supposed to be. So we have a lot of tricks, a lot of techniques, a lot of information people, so they can do it on their own, financial assistance, all kinds of ways we can help people achieve that.
Well, it feels like spring already out there, but you're taking tree orders right now. So to give the people an idea of what this tree program is like and some of the orders that you're taking.
Sure. So many of the listeners might know this is an annual thing. Some of them even might have received in their mailbox recently among all the other seed catalogs they get this time of year. My favorite one personally is the West Polk SWCD newsletter, which includes our tree order form and information about our tree program. So what we do is we offer conservation grade tree and shrub seedlings to anyone in the district that wants to purchase them for conservation needs or beautification, anything they want. They can either just buy them by themselves, plant them themselves, or we also offer a service where we can kind of walk them through the process. I can take a look at their soil, topography, and everything using remote tools, find out what's exactly going to grow best for them with the least maintenance. And we can even plant trees for people too. If your soil is worked up and you have a big project that you wouldn't want to hand plant, we can machine plant it for you and get it done in a lot less time.
So is this just for like farmers, or is this for like average people who just want to, you know, have some trees in their yard?
Anyone. So originally the program started years and years ago where we just planted windbreaks for soil erosion protection. Those are the long lines of trees you see in the flat prairie cropland out there. It's evolved since then to planting farmstead windbreaks for people that want protection around their house and their outbuildings, wildlife plantings, and even new for this year, since, you know, a lot of people that either live in town or have a smaller yard or don't need a whole bundle of one species of tree, we're now offering wildlife bundles for bare root trees. So if you have seen our newsletter and the order form in it or would like to look at one, there's four options on there that can fit different size yards, different types of soil and everything. And it's all about biodiversity, getting plants in the ground that are going to create a small ecosystem, basically, for the benefit of wildlife, year-round cover, food, all that stuff.
So when you talk about different types of soil, you know, the way I think is, oh, it's just all dirt. But is that very dependent on what kind of tree that you have to plant and what's going to be the healthiest for that tree?
Yep. Very, very different in our district. So most of our district is the valley bottom clay. That's the really productive, dark, heavy soil. That's great for growing sugar beets. You get towards our eastern townships and it turns into the beach ridges really quick. And as the name suggests, those are almost entirely beach sand, as deep as you can dig. And that kind of soil doesn't hold water well. The water table can fluctuate a lot, so you have to have resilient trees that can tap into that and keep going if there's a drought or if there's flooding. It's just all about resilience, and certain trees will grow in one area better than others. Some will grow okay in all areas. But knowing what you're dealing with and having the recommendation for trees that will grow in that area is a great way to save yourself a lot of time and headache.
So what's the process like with this tree program?
So if you kind of are studying at the beginning, you don't really know where you stand, what kind of soil you have. Say you're new to the area and you want to get some trees planted before you build a house or something like that, just call our office. The number is 218-281-6070, and we can use remote tools online to know exactly what kind of soil you're dealing with, the water table, topography, all that sort of thing, and give you not necessarily a list of ones that'll work best, but maybe a couple species to stay away from, the ones that you're going to be consistently replanting until you find something better that's going to stick. So people can go that route. If you have an idea what you're dealing with, you can just fill out an order form, which you can find on our website, or if you want to be on our newsletter mailing list, you can have one sent to you. Just check the boxes, let me know which tree species you want and how many, fill out the form, add up the tax, mail it in, and we'll give you a notification once our tree delivery date comes around in spring. It'd just be a postcard that tells you when the pickup dates are. Come by, pick them up, and go plant. We'll try to get them here at the right time of year when the snow's gone and there's still some soil moisture, so you have a better chance of getting establishment.
There's quite a bit of research that goes into planting a tree. It's not as simple as just tossing a tree in the ground and letting it grow.
That's one thing I've learned over my years in tree care. So I used to climb and prune and remove trees, and now I plant and maintain and offer advice on dealing with them, and that's it. You know, I'm a certified arborist, and one of the things that's really been kind of hammered into our heads over the years is that we're not tree doctors or tree pruners, we're stress managers. So the first step in stress management is knowing your soil, what your objectives are, and then picking the right tree to fit that spot. Because some are just native to our area and are going to, you know, feel perfectly well at home there. Some you can get away with, they might need a little bit of help. But the main thing all around that is biodiversity. So, you know, back in the day, one of the tacks people took, and you see a lot of the evidence this still on the landscape, is just planting monocultures. You know, if you want some trees around your farmstead, plant three rows of green ash or three rows of spruce. And anybody that farms around here knows that monocultures are difficult and very expensive to maintain. You know, you don't have the resilience of an ecosystem there. One of those dominoes falls and all the rest of them is going to start collapsing. It's a great way for disease to spread from one tree to the next, and you don't have essentially a firebreak there of a different, more resilient tree to kind of break things up and keep your ecosystem going. So that's one of my, I guess, philosophies about tree planting, is I try to pay attention to what nature tells us. It's easier to work with nature than against her, because she bats last and she always wins. It's just how it is. And if you fight nature, you're going to fail or spend a lot of money trying. So there aren't a lot of forests that just have a monoculture of single species trees. You have super canopy trees, you have the canopy trees, some shade tolerant understory trees and shrubs, you have the edge species, you know, some other shrubs, and knowing how those fit in a forest and then doing your best to mimic that in the context of a windbreak is a great way to kind of have all those blanks filled in from day one. You know, if you have a couple rows of shrubs in there, 10, 20 years later, birds are going to find those seeds and spread them around. One of your bigger trees falls, and you might have some seedlings there in the ground ready to go from day one. So you don't end up with either a gap that's going to be a hole in your windbreak and causes drifting in your yard, or you end up with an invasive like buckthorn or honeysuckle that's waiting to fill in, and that's going to be a much harder problem to deal with after it starts than it would be if you had gotten out in front of it in the beginning.
So you mentioned, you know, trying to mimic a forest. How easy is that?
It's not too hard, actually. I mean, there's certain ingredients to a windbreak you want. You want to have the taller trees that are going to be the ones that really stop the wind in winter and in summer too. You know, it's just always windy here. Finding those understory species, you know, the shrubs that are going to sucker and produce seeds that are going to fill in those blanks, those also coincidentally make great snow fence species. So if you try to put an edge around your forest, your windbreak, you might start with a nine bark or a dogwood or something like that. Those make great snow fences. And once you have those shrubs established and kind of, working with you, replicating themselves inside the windbreak, that's their natural niche in the ecosystem. That's just what they do. So as long as you, this is what I tell people, is do your best to just get the genes on the landscape. You know, it doesn't have to look perfect, because in 20, 30, or 50 years, it's not going to look perfect anyways. The plants are going to find their place. You just have to get them out there. Put a little bit of care in the first couple of years, watering, weed control, maybe a little pruning for some of the shade trees. But the goal is to, and to quote Ron Popeil, set it and forget it. Get stuff out there, take care of it, and then just walk away from it with minimal maintenance. And that, having all those pieces in play out there from the beginning is going to make it much less likely that having all of your puzzle pieces, which happen to be the same, knocked out in one shot and then leave you without wind protection and then having to scramble to clear the lot up and then get something planted in there and then wait another 20 years before you have a functional windbreak.
What are some of the best piece of advice you can give to new tree planters?
Call 218-281-6070 and ask for advice. I always tell people the prairie is a really hard place to plant trees. The reason it's a grassland for a reason. Every year it does everything it can to erase every tree we've planted out here, and it's not going to stop doing that. So it's just people at home might not have the tools to look into their exact soil type, know water table fluctuations that are going to cause headaches with certain species of trees. So it just starts with that conversation. I can find out your goals, what you're looking for, how much room you have available, and then get you started on the right track with the right species selection and spacing. We can calculate exactly the number of trees you'll need to finish that project. I'll give you an estimate. And if it's as simple as that, you know, we can order the trees and go from there. Otherwise, we can fine tune things and make sure you get exactly what you want in the ground on the first try.
Are there any cost share differences for this year?
Yeah, definitely. So traditionally in past, we've been able to cost share field windbreaks and farmstead windbreaks. And this year, new for 2024, we're able to cost share wildlife tree planting. So that can look like either, you know, if you'd been thinking about planting a farmstead windbreak, maybe you add two or three rows to that. So you end up with a six row planting, you know, something that's going to add biodiversity, something that's going to provide seeds and berries for wildlife, nesting habitat, winter cover, all the things that wildlife is going to need in this harsh climate all year long when they're living outdoors. So putting a little bit of thought into that, the plan might cost a little bit more in the long run, but we can cost share those now. So it's not something that you have to go all on your own. We can offset some of that cost, maybe take some of that money you saved and put more of it into what you would need to water the trees and establish them in the first year.
Earlier this week, there was an interesting discussion that took place. It was the Soil Health Farmer Panel discussion. That took place on Monday, but then there's going to be one coming up on Tuesday, February 20th.
That's right. Yeah, we had our first one of the year. Last year, we held a bunch of them. Those were more focused on having one academic or industry expert speak to the crowd and lead a discussion about soil health topics, cover crops, reduced tillage, grazing, all that sort of stuff. This year, I'm trying something different where we're having soil health panels where we'll still have one or two academic experts there, industry experts, but then local farmers, too, that have been trying this stuff for the last couple of years. And, you know, these guys are willing to share their experiences and talk about their successes, talk about their failures, everything in between, because I don't want to sugarcoat the topic. I know it's not going to work for everybody right away on everybody's farm because they're all different. Soil's different. Your operation's different. Your rotation's different. But giving people, I guess, an honest take on it and things to look out for in the first couple of years trying it. You know, there's a lot of people that have been trying this stuff and finding their way down that path right away. Talk to them, learn from them, ask questions, and you can save yourself a lot of time and headache.
So how did the first discussion go on Monday?
Excellent. We had a better turnout than we had all last year. The discussion was excellent. I mean, I learn a lot with every one of these. And, you know, honestly, I love the phone calls I have with farmers where they just open up and talk about what they've been working on because, you know, these guys are passionate about it. They've been trying this stuff. It's not always easy. But, boy, when you get a success, when your first year after strip tilling or no tilling, and you go out into that field in spring, like, you know, spring 2022, and the rain wouldn't stop. Everybody's fields were mud, but it, you know, a couple guys had some stubble in their fields from wheat because they didn't till it all under in the fall. And that means you're able to get out in that field earlier than a lot of people around you. And that's one of those things that really sticks out. And it's kind of a gateway drug. You know, there's a lot of other benefits that come along with working towards soil health. But it's those things that really stick in people's minds and kind of, you know, it's like a cheerleader for yourself. You have that in your mind and you want to keep working towards that goal and keep giving that a shot.
What exactly is soil health?
So there's a lot of different ways to define or describe or have a conversation about soil health. And if you were to ask me one day to the next, my answer might even change. But one way I like to frame it is, if you look at your cropland, every plant you put out there, every seed you plant is a solar panel. They're going to put energy into producing you money with the yield that you combine off at the end of the year if you lift it up, if it's beets. But they're also putting energy into the soil too. So those roots go into the ground. There's energy in those roots, carbohydrates, you know, food for microbes, for earthworms. There's channels that they leave behind when those roots decompose. And all that stuff adds up to giving your soil structure. The structure is what we need in the soil so that it doesn't compact. You know, that leads to drought tolerance. You know, if you can get rainfall to go in your soil to follow those cracks that have been left behind by the plants and the microbes and the earthworms, it doesn't run off. So that's, I mean, that's just kind of one side of it. And normally when people, you know, conventional farming is you'll have your crop in the ground for 3 or 4 months. And it's doing work, it's giving you your yield, it's improving the soil, but the next 8 to 9 months of the year, your soil is essentially unemployed. There's nothing living in it. And when it's just sitting there at the mercy of the elements, entropy ensues. That's just nature. You know, there's no life in there. There's no energy coming from the sun to kind of turn it into an ecosystem of its own. And that entropy leads to compaction. Compacted soil erodes more. So spring runoff is going to take all your fertilizer and your organic matter into waterways. It leads to disease issues, weeds. Weeds love conventionally tilled ground. It's just a constant thing any farmer has to deal with. You got to keep the weeds out of the field to keep your crop happy. But when you, and this, I don't want to make this sound like a trivial switch to farming, but if you're incorporating cover crops the remainder of the growing season, you're just essentially harnessing more of that sunlight, more of that energy that comes from free from the sun for the low price of putting some cover crop seed out there. And you can put that energy to work to kind of taking another step in the direction towards giving your soil that structure, the infiltration ability, keeping the microbes happy. You know, the microbes are what make fertilizers available to plant roots. The happier you can keep them, the more nutrients your plants are going to have access to more easily throughout the rest of the season. So that can lead to reduced input costs. It's just basically looking at soil as a living thing. You know, one analogy I have is back in the day before there was diesel power and before steam, people would work their fields with, ox, mules, horses, whatever. And when you get done with the growing season, a conventional farmer, you know, you're done with your wheat crop. You might work it a couple times to loosen it up, undo some compaction, get it ready for your sugar beets the next year. And when you're done, when winter sets in, that soil doesn't have any cover. It's like putting a workhorse away after you're done working, wet, cold, hungry, no water, and just lonely out in the field by itself. But having those cover crops still living in the soil keeps all your microbes happy, keeps those fungi in the soil ready to just pick up right where they left off as soon as you plant your cash crop. It holds the structure. You have some residue on the field too, which is going to slow down the impact of rainfall and keep that from compacting your soil. You know, the roots and the stubble in the soil also will help slow the wind down and hold the soil together so it doesn't blow away. One common sight around these last couple days here is now that the snow in the ditches is starting to melt, you notice how black it is after certain wind blowing events. And it doesn't seem like much. It seems like just a little bit of soil on top of the snow, but every year that adds up, and that's where all your organic matter and your fertilizers and your chemicals go. You know, the heavier particles stay in the field. Some of them might stick to the bottom of the ditch, but it's the valuable stuff that's blowing away that you're never going to see again. And anything you can do to hold that means your farm is going to be profitable for longer in the future. Topsoil is the only reason anybody lives in the valley right now. I mean, Crookston wouldn't be here. None of these cities would be here. You know, we are all in here basically in support of farming. And once that soil is gone, once it's not profitable, that goes away. And civilizations have come and gone on this planet because of soil loss. So the more we can do to keep it intact, the better.
That's very interesting stuff. You can hear about that and all kinds of interesting stuff with the soil health discussion. That's going to be on the 20th, and that is going to be also in part with the Healthy Soil in Beet, and that's an RSVP event on the 20th too.
Yes, please call our office if you want to go to the February 20th event. That's going to be held at Beet Ballroom. Just give me a heads up. Let me know if you're going to attend, how many people are going to attend, and I'll put you down because we're going to be providing food at that one, and we want to get a head count. Everything else, the next one coming up, March 12th, that's going to be back at Valley Tech Park, north of UMC. That's, again, a free event, and no RSVP needed. Just show up if you want to.
And what are the times for both of those?
Those are both going to be 2 to 4 p.m., both of them on a Tuesday, so February 20th and March 12th.
So RSVP on February 20th and Tuesday, March 12th. Just show up and listen. And another great discussion, as you talked about on Monday, a great turnout there. Hopefully two more great turnouts here as we get closer to spring. And something exciting coming up in the second week of July.
Yeah, so this is something I just found out about recently. We were approached by Bruce Johnson down in Traverse SWCD, and he had been working with Mark Gutierrez with the Minnesota Soil Health Coalition to try to get a big name speaker, Ray Archuleta. I don't know if your viewers have heard of him. I just learned of him recently, but he is a world-renowned speaker. He really understands soil health. He farms himself. He's been doing soil conservation for his entire professional career, so he knows this stuff inside out, and he's excited to do a tour down the valley. We're going to have events. Well, I shouldn't say we. They are going to be up in Kitson, here in Crookston. The event is going to be in field, just a couple miles out of town on a local farmer's cropland. And then they're going to continue moving their way south in the second week of July. So we're going to be the second stop on that tour. I think that's going to be the 9th. Stay tuned for that one, though, because we're still working on it. We know it's going to happen. We know that's going to be the second week in July. But to get the details down, we'll definitely have more outreach and promotion for that one as the days go by.
So very exciting coming up here in July, a big event coming to town.
Yes, definitely. And it's good to get these big name speakers, but like I've been saying this whole time, we in the valley here, and when I say we, I mean the farmers that have been working on this stuff, they are the ones that are standing on the shoulders of giants. Research can get us so far, but when you start doing this stuff on the ground, that's when you find out how it works on your farm and our soil, and that's the conversation we're going to have.
One last time, the phone number and the website where people can either call or just go online and find out all kinds of information.
Sure. Yeah, if you want to know about our tree program, upcoming soil health events, call 218-281-6070. And our email address is westpolkswcd.org. And you can ask, you know, find out the details on any of these events, the tree sale, and any cost share we have available for windbreaks, wildlife plantings. We can help solve gullying and erosion concerns in fields with structures. We have a team that can survey and design a solution to that. Well sealing, that's another one. You know, if you have an old abandoned well and you're concerned about water working its way through an old casing down into groundwater, we can help prevent that. We can cost share that for you. And same thing, call our office, 218-281-6070. We can walk you through the whole cost share process and get that done as cheap as we can for you.
Well, Morgan, thank you very much for joining us on today's Valley Talk program. We'll have to talk later on.
That sounds good. Thank you very much.
So that was Morgan Torkelson on today's Valley Talk program.